Welcome to the Deep Dive. How do we really move to a world where skills, not just, formal qualifications, define what we can do and open doors? Today, we're taking a deep dive into understanding a really critical shift happening right now in the global workforce. Our source material for this comes from a fascinating recent roundtable discussion. It was held June 5th, 2025 in Singapore. And this wasn't just any meeting, it was actually spearheaded by the Office for Skills First Practices, the OSP, under the Institute for Adult Learning. It's part of a crucial six-part working paper series, all aimed at building a skills-first ecosystem.
Right. And our mission for you, the listener, in this deep dive is pretty clear. We're going to unpack the key definitions from their initial paper, then we'll really get into the structural barriers that are, standing in the way of this skills-first world. We'll explore which barriers the experts felt were, most urgent, and finally look at some incredibly practical opportunities for pilot initiatives, things that could actually make this vision a reality.
Yeah. And what's compelling here is that it's not just theory, right? This roundtable brought together 13 local and international experts, plus over 100 participants. So you're getting a distillation of real-world experiences and ideas that could actually work. Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. The initial working paper, it outlined five structural gaps, things like signaling failure, coordination deficit, risk asymmetry, measurement gap, cultural resistance. But the roundtable, it unearthed even more critical barriers. Out of these newer ones, what really stands out to you? Which one feels like maybe the trickiest?
It's interesting how many tap into, basic human nature. Take present bias. This is where individuals, they focus on immediate job security. Employers, they're chasing quarterly performance. Policymakers often look at short-term cycles. What makes it so tricky, I think, is how it creates the systemic blind spot. Companies know they need new skills for the future, right? But they're often structurally, almost unconsciously, incentivized to prioritize the short-term gains. So they end up deprioritizing the very investments that ensure their long-term survival. It's like knowing you should eat healthy, but always reaching for that quick snack anyway.
That's a really good analogy. And it's not just mindset, is it? There are tangible limitations too.
Oh, absolutely. Resource limitations, that's a huge one, especially for SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises. Mm. They often just lack the capacity, maybe the tools, or even the internal systems to really do skills-first practices, like skills mapping or customized training. It's tough. Then there's also often a pretty significant disconnect between business leaders and HR. Business leaders might not be clear on what skills are needed as things evolve, while the HR or L&D teams, they aren't always strategically in the loop. So you miss opportunities to really link workforce development with actual business transformation.
Right. And the last one you mentioned, this lack of individual agency and confidence, that feels really important, too.
Yeah, you see it with younger job seekers, sometimes older workers too. They struggle to identify their own skill gaps or even just articulate the capabilities they already have or, plan their next career move effectively. It really limits their potential because they maybe don't know how to advocate for themselves based on skills. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, all these additional insights, they collectively point towards needing deeper shifts. Structural shifts, cultural shifts, both within the wider systems and actually at the individual level too. Mm. We need these changes to make skills-first practices genuinely inclusive and sustainable, which of course raises the big question. How on earth do we start untangling challenges that are so deeply embedded and interconnected?
That really is the million-dollar question. With all these tangled barriers, how do you even begin? Where do you focus? The roundtable did have some clear thoughts on prioritizing, didn't they?
They did. And what's fascinating is how the experts really seem to coalesce around risk asymmetry as the most pressing issue right now. That's the idea we touched on, those misaligned incentives. Employers hesitate to upskill because they worry employees will leave. Workers are uncertain about the payoff from their own training investment. But what's critical, and this came through strongly, is a mindset shift that seems to be happening. Employers are increasingly seeing upskilling not just as a cost, but as an investment. And this view is definitely being accelerated by the growing skills shortages we're seeing everywhere.
So necessity is driving that change.
Pretty much. And it's not always about huge budgets either. They shared practical examples like low-cost mentoring or buddy systems just to help people apply new skills on the job. Though SMEs, admittedly, still face real challenges there.
That's a crucial shift in perspective. Okay, next up in priority was signaling failure. Can you break that down in practical terms?
Yeah, signaling failure is basically the lack of trusted, clear ways to show and verify skills beyond just formal qualifications. Because degrees and certificates, they often just don't capture everything a person can actually do.
It's like having this brilliant skill, but no common language to describe it so others understand its value.
Exactly. So the fundamental question becomes, how do we move beyond just looking at academic credentials or job history as proxies for actual ability? The panelists really emphasized needing more performance-based tools to identify and validate skills. And critically, this point came up online too, skills shouldn't be seen as opposed to qualifications. It's broader. Skills enable performance, and you get them through education, yes, but also experience and workplace learning.
So it's about the whole picture.
Right. And to connect it back to you, the listener, thinking about how to frame the conversation around outcomes like productivity gains or making the workforce more adaptable or accessing wider talent pools, that language tends to resonate more strongly with business leaders and workers. It makes skills first feel less abstract, more tangible.
Makes sense. And finally, demand-led shifts were seen as critical, but maybe under-addressed.
Yes, that's about tightening the connection between training efforts and what's actually happening in the workplace now. You know, the ongoing transformation, making sure learning stays relevant to what businesses really need, not just theoretically, but practically today and tomorrow.
And for individuals.
For individuals, the idea of upstream triggers came up as really important. These are those big life moments, maybe becoming a parent, kids leaving home, a health issue, things that prompt deeper reflection about your career, your purpose. That kind of reflection can lead to a much more intentional alignment between learning and your long-term aspirations. It goes beyond typical career coaching, tapping into intrinsic motivation.
Which requires a real breakthrough in how we support people through those transition.
Absolutely. And it also requires the education and training systems themselves to become much more agile and responsive.
Okay, so that brings up a great point. What kind of changes are we talking about there for the education and training systems?
Well, the discussions really highlighted several ways education needs to evolve. Suggestions included things like embedding interdisciplinary skills into the curriculum, sort of hedging against future risks, making people more adaptable. Also, strengthening how we recognize skills people gain across different life stages, like could caregiving experience be formally recognized as a bridge into related jobs? That kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, and ensuring all students get meaningful workplace learning opportunities. Plus, equipping training providers with real-time labor market insights so they're actually teaching the skills that are in demand now.
It's great to diagnose the problems and prioritize. But what about actual solutions? Did the roundtable move into identifying concrete opportunities? Pilot initiatives, maybe? They did propose several exciting initiatives, yeah. One was employer-led demonstration projects. The idea is to directly measure the business impact of skills-first hiring and internal mobility, especially focusing on those resource-limited SMEs. Let's get some hard data. There was also strong interest in piloting alternative skill signaling mechanisms, moving beyond just the formal qualifications piece. So ideas like digital portfolios, capstone projects, even developing models to infer skills based on someone's actual real-world job experience. If you're looking to showcase your capabilities differently, this stuff is potentially game-changing.
Definitely. And another concept they revisited was the place and train model. So this is where employers recruit based more on potential and someone's ability to learn first, and then they provide targeted upskilling after the person is hired.
It's not entirely new, but it feels like a different emphasis.
It really represents a shift in risk appetite. Instead of holding out for that perfect pre-packaged candidate, employers are investing in potential. It redefines job ready and could seriously widen the talent pool in ways traditional hiring just can't.
And one more idea that struck me is really powerful.
Which one?
Supporting HR teams to help employees articulate their existing skills.
Ah, yes, that's crucial. It isn't just about learning new things, but about surfacing, recognizing, and reflecting on the capabilities people already possess.
Exactly. Imagine the impact if individuals really understood and could clearly talk about the full range of skills they already have. It could totally change career paths.
Looking at the bigger picture then, these kinds of multi-stakeholder pilots co-developed with employers, training providers, public agencies, they're absolutely vital. They act as critical testing grounds. We generate evidence, we learn what actually works on the ground, and then the whole ecosystem can iterate and scale up the successful interventions together.
And crucially, the experts really underscore the importance of starting small. Focus on proving value in a specific setting first, rather than trying to change everything overnight.
Exactly. Prove the concept, then scale.
So beyond these main discussions, were there other vital perspectives that emerged, maybe from the online engagement that ran alongside the roundtable?
Yeah, a few things. One insight that really resonated was that this whole push for skills first isn't just some, aspirational policy goal. It's actually driven by very pragmatic needs. Labor market shortages are a big one. There's an urgency to expand access to talent pools that maybe have been underrecognized before. So it's a necessary response to real workforce constraints, helping employers widen those hiring pipelines.
A practical necessity, not just a nice to have.
Precisely. Another point that stood out, maybe unsurprisingly, was the challenge of just keeping pace. Skills demands are evolving so rapidly, especially with AI and other emerging tech, and that creates a lot of uncertainty for individuals trying to navigate their careers.
Understandable. And I heard there was strong support for more hands-on learning.
Yes, definitely. Support for work-based learning and experiential pilots, like involving employees directly in sandbox initiatives to help codify and validate emerging skills in real time as they appear.
Learning by doing and defining the skills as you go.
Sort of, yeah. And finally, something that connects back to education, a clear affirmation that we need to nurture agency and curiosity right from a young age. The suggestion was that the education system needs to do more to foster intrinsic motivation, going beyond just standard tests and assessments. It really underlines the need for an integrated system-wide approach to skills, starting early and continuing right through life.
This deep dive has really highlighted just how complex, but also how urgent, building the skills-first ecosystem is. It's clear it's not just a buzzword. It feels like a very pragmatic response to real-world challenges, driven by this need to optimize talent and just adapt to a future that's changing incredibly fast.
Absolutely. And I think a key takeaway from all this collective wisdom is that tackling these deeply interconnected barriers needs a truly multifaceted approach. You need employers, individuals, educators, policymakers, everyone working together.
So for you, the listener, maybe here's a final thought to consider as we wrapped up. In your own career, or maybe in your organization, how could you start to champion more of a skills-first mindset? What are those unseen skills that you or your team possess that, if they were properly articulated and recognized, could unlock new opportunities, maybe even drive innovation? Something to think about.